I'm Kim Singletary.
And I'm Rich Collins.
And you're listening to Biz Talks,
a weekly conversation with local business leaders about topics affecting New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Biz Talks. I'm Kim Singletary, the editor of Biz New Orleans Magazine. And this week we're talking about mortgages and affordability and all of that fun. It's not the best, like, you know, happy news, but you know, we got to talk about it. And I'm joined this week by Ross Miller. He is a Louisiana native, born and bred, and he's also an active member of the Greater New Orleans mortgage community since 1993. He is currently a board member with the National Association of Mortgage Brokers. So he could be able to tell us about how things are going on the national end as well. And he's owner of Miller Home Mortgage, which is here in Metairie, Louisiana. Welcome, Ross.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me.
So I'm excited to talk to you. I bought a home, like a lot of people did, a couple of years ago. I'm trying to take advantage of those low interest rates. And of course, those skyrocketed all across the U.S. really, really quickly. And that has hurt affordability. We wouldn't have been able to buy this house now that we bought, you know, a little over 2 years ago. So that's an issue. And then we've got our insurance problems as well, hitting with affordability. But let's just start real quick and tell me about the National Association of Mortgage Brokers, a little bit about, like, what's your membership like? What is this? This is, you know, all over the country as well. And what do you guys do as an organization?
Sure. So the National Association of Mortgage Brokers represents loan officers and mortgage companies across the country. We are actually in our 50th anniversary this year. So a 50-year-old organization. We have members from all 50 states. We provide education, including continuing education for loan officers. We provide certifications for different types of products, VA, FHA, reverse mortgages, just as some examples. Okay. And then we lobby for the mortgage industry in Washington, D.C. as well. So we are trying to pass some federal legislation, trying to improve affordability, trying to make sure that homeowners have privacy in terms of applying for a home loan as well. And we can talk a little bit more about some of the details of that in a minute. Yeah, so that's what NAM does.
So I think we know about, you know, we all know we've heard about the rates going up, and we've heard obviously the insurance issues. The flood insurance issues for me, I mean, homeowners is just, it's a killer. And I'm sure that's what a lot of people are dealing with, even with we're getting a brand new roof and a fortified roof, and it's still going to be twice what we paid a couple of years ago. So it's just insane. So what, I guess you can tell us on that end, what is going on that? And is there any hope? What are you guys pushing for?
Sure. So I think there is hope on it. I've met with Tim Temple, right, the Louisiana Insurance Commissioner. They did not do a special session this year in Baton Rouge on insurance, unfortunately. But Tim seems to be, you know, moving his agenda through the process, and it seems to have been received very positively. These include some items to improve homeowners insurance, including repealing certain laws that don't allow insurance companies to drop homeownership after 3 years, right? That mandate certain penalties to be in effect if payouts aren't made within certain time windows.
Okay.
These items will allow insurance companies to have a better idea of what they would actually pay out in a loss versus the way Louisiana is structured currently, which is that the insurance companies don't know how much they have to pay out. So some of the legislation that they're moving through the House and the Senate in Louisiana, I think will benefit us in the long run.
Okay.
Those items will create a level playing field with Louisiana versus what's going on in other states along the Gulf Coast, like Alabama and Mississippi. What they presented isn't asking Louisiana to be a leader in the insurance industry. It's asking us just to get where everybody else is, because we're way behind.
So that's what I was going to ask, because like, we're not obviously the only people that are being hit by this. And like, Texas gets hit really hard. Florida gets hit really hard. The entire Gulf Coast gets hit really hard. So I guess that's one of my main questions at the beginning was, are we doing something wrong here? How do we catch up? Like what?
Yeah. So yeah. The main item I think that they're going to be pushing for is putting into code items like, when does a event happen? When does a claim start? What dates do payments have to be made by? Because right now that's not a requirement that's in writing. So it creates a very ambiguous set of dates, and when insurance companies don't meet the dates, they all of a sudden incur a 50% penalty per Louisiana statute. So if you have a $300,000 policy and you're hit by a hurricane, and you know the date is, you know, was it a Monday that you got your claim, or was it a Thursday you got a claim? Did you file on the next Thursday? Did you file on the next Saturday? Right? What date of those four dates is your starting date? Then, if the insurance company doesn't make an initial payment to you within 30 days, even though you've been paying, let's say, on a $300,000 policy, by law in Louisiana, that means now you can go hire a lawyer, go in front of a judge or a jury, and when you win, because you probably will, that policy is not a $300,000 policy, it's a $450,000 policy. So now those insurance companies have been dealing with that through the storms we've been having from Katrina through 2023. And they basically have gotten to the end of their rope. They've said, we can't keep pricing insurance based on $300,000 policies when we have a potential of a $450,000 payoff.
Okay.
So if they change the law in the state and we're able to tell the insurance companies, these are exactly what the rules are, whatever they are.
Okay.
Then the insurance company can price the insurance accordingly. They will be able to calculate what their risk is, and the insurance companies will come back in and write more policies, and more insurance companies will come in and create competition, and we will have lower homeowners insurance. If you don't think they want to come here, the insurance companies will tell you, as long as they can price the policy, they'll write anywhere. They write in the Bahamas, for Christ's sakes.
Okay.
Right.
So
they get hit by hurricanes and they're still writing policies there.
It blows my mind though. So how have we gone this far without having any rules?
It's because we've really only experienced this huge increase in the last three years. My personal homeowner's policy was $2,600. And my renewal quote was $16,800.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Obviously we didn't accept that policy, but that was a change that not only I experienced personally, but everybody started experiencing, and that was the 22 to 23 renewal. So 100,000 homeowners had their policies canceled by insurance companies who pulled out of the marketplace, right? All those people moved to Citizens or some other insurance company. That all happened around in 22. So The answer is we've been going along okay with small increases, but the insurance companies have reached their tipping point and just were like, we're not going to do this anymore. And so they all left. And now we have limited choices with high premiums, and we need to change what we're doing in order to encourage those insurance companies to come back into the marketplace. There's over 250 licensed insurance producers in the state of Louisiana. And we only have 3 to 5 choices in South Louisiana.
Wow.
I said wow too when I heard that statistic. And I called the office, I called the Department of Insurance, and a very nice lady there brought me onto the insurance page and showed me the laundry list of all of the companies that were licensed to write insurance in Louisiana. And she was exactly right. There were over 250. But how do we have 250 licensed companies and only have 2 or 3 choices? They've got to price this based on the risk. And right now, our risk per legislation is causing these high prices and limiting choice. And I think Tim Temple is making every effort to improve that situation so we will get more competitive prices.
So that kind of fills in a gap for me, because when I was thinking about it, and I've heard people talk about this before, compared to, say, pre-Katrina, there's been massive investments in this city and protecting this city. And so on that end, and they've proven to have worked, mm-hmm. On that end, we should be seeing pretty good, decent, you know, rates comparatively. We have a lot more protection here than a lot of places do.
So what you're addressing is mitigation. Right?
Okay.
That's the term, mitigation.
Yes.
What we've mitigated against is flood risk.
Okay, great.
Not homeowners risk.
Homeowners, because that's wind and that's roofs.
Yes. And wind, hail, fire, theft, those are your all perils. And by the way, I'm not an insurance agent. Okay.
Right.
So this is just my experience from being in the mortgage industry and talking to insurance agents and customers, et cetera. But you're 100% right. Billions of dollars have been spent on flood mitigation. And in some small areas, flood insurance has actually decreased in terms of the price. But most areas, especially in South Louisiana, either have already increased or are going to continue to increase between now and 2030, when 100% of the risk rating 2.0 pricing goes into effect, including Plaquemines Parish, where the average price for a flood insurance policy is going to be over $5,000 per house just for flood. Okay. One of the arguments that NAM is arguing, as well as many other great organizations throughout South Louisiana, is that the mitigation has not actually been fully addressed within the risk rating 2.0 pricing.
Okay.
I believe it's St. Charles Parish that had 11,000 homes damaged, I believe from Katrina. Don't quote me on the storm names. As you know, we have lots of different named storms and they get a little confusing. But I believe they had 11,000 homes damaged. They raised property taxes. They leveraged government, national and state government money to go with their property taxes. And they mitigated against flood damage. And when the last major storm hit St. Charles Parish, they had 11 houses damaged. Yeah. That's proof mitigation works, right? But risk rating 2.0 kicked in 2022, and practically the entire parish is seeing rate increases. So the question is, why didn't the millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, and higher taxes from mitigation, why didn't that prevent St. Charles Parish from having low or no increases in risk rating 2.0 pricing? And as far as we can tell from the information we've been given, is that it just doesn't appear that all of that mitigation has actually been taken into account with the current way pricing is being done.
Okay.
The entire Louisiana federal legislative group, Kennedy, Cassidy, everybody, Carter, Scalise, everybody, right? They are all asking for more transparency from NFIP, from FEMA. How are you calculating this? Those organizations would say they're providing that information. The legislative group from Louisiana would say, not enough. You haven't given us enough information. We still can't figure out how this is all working, and we need more. And we're pushing for that. NAM is pushing for that as well. We are supporting the legislation. We're currently working with several other lending organizations as well as insurance organizations to complete a comment letter right now, because NFIP is about to change the flood declaration page. Try to provide more or new information on what your flood insurance covers. What does it mean? What's protected? What's not protected? We were told that risk rating 2.0 now includes what's called a full risk premium, right? So if your premium was $1,200, your full risk premium is $3,000, you're going to go up 18% a year until you reach that $3,000 number, which again, everybody's supposed to reach that number by 2030.
Okay.
Well, now they're coming out and saying, okay, in addition to, and let me go back, and that 3,000, that's your maximum. Okay. All right. Well, now they're coming out and now they want to implement 4 new endorsements that could potentially raise your full risk premium even higher if you choose to accept it. It would include things like coverage for your basement. It could be that an actual cash value policy versus a replacement cost policy. Right now, they're all replacement costs. An actual might actually lower your premium a few dollars, but now you don't get the same payout if your house floods.
Right, right.
Okay. So we're commenting on those endorsements. What's the positive? Which ones are positive? Which ones are negative as well? So again, these are things that are ongoing right now. The deadline for those comments is May 31st. So we would certainly recommend if any individual wants to comment, these are public records. They have the right to comment. NAM is commenting again with a group of other lender organizations and insurance organizations.
So what I've been reading too is all of this stuff that's kind of in the works wouldn't really provide any relief to people for at least a couple of years. Is that true?
Well, it depends. There's some conversation. You know, GNO Inc. has been a really strong leader on this all the way back to Katrina. And NAM and GNO Inc. for several years, actually 2 years, we've been pushing for the risk rating 2.0 annual percentage increase to be reduced. It's 18% right now. We've been asking for it to be reduced to 8, 9, 10% annually. It's going to push that runway out further, but instead of a policy going up, you know, maybe $30 a month year over year, it only goes up $15 a month year over year, which just makes it a little easier, especially in Louisiana where we have high insurance and now, of course, higher interest rates for mortgages. That's something that we think NFIP could change very quickly, right? They could make the change. They could say it's going to go into effect for all new renewals effective October 2024. And And there's plenty of time between now and then to implement that change. So your increase wouldn't be as much. There's been some good conversation about that, but nothing has been determined yet.
So when you're talking about, like you said, Plaquemines Parish, but 500% increases, that's enough to just wipe out an entire area, isn't it? Like just people live there at all.
Absolutely. The median income for Louisiana is $55,000. That's the area median income. If your average flood insurance is $5,000 and you're a median homeowner, median income in the state, that means 10% of your pre-tax dollars are going to pay just for your flood insurance. You haven't even paid for your homeowner's policy yet or your mortgage. And you haven't put groceries on the table or paid for gas or paid for your auto insurance. So, it's going to create those situations where people are not going to be able to live in certain parts of the state any longer, it seems like. There have already been podcasts and other calls and reports about places in other parts of the country as well, where families have lived in neighborhoods that are being affected by this, and they just are selling their houses and moving. Yeah. It also, in my opinion, is unrealistic to believe that people are not going to live in these coastal areas. Okay. If somebody works offshore, where are they supposed to live? I mean, are we going to make sure everybody lives, north of Lafayette and they have, either an extra, if they're flying out somewhere, they have an extra 120 miles every trip that a helicopter is taking them, or if they're on a boat that they're going to have to drive an extra 2 hours or 3 hours every day to go to work. We have a huge seafood industry. We have a huge oil industry in Louisiana and all of these things, and not just Louisiana, right? These are Mississippi issues. These are Alabama issues. These are Florida issues. North Carolina, South Carolina, New Jersey, right? I mean, all of these areas are on the coast. They're all being affected by these higher premiums.
So when you're on, this would, really fascinated me about talking to you, because you're a part of this national group. And so you're talking to all these people from all these other states. And so Are there things, are you guys kind of as like the hurricane crowd? Are you like getting together and going, what's everybody doing? And, and how, because it is something that has to be dealt with, not only hurricanes, but just on a national level. I'm from Southern California, and so they get hit by pretty much everything except for hurricanes. So it feels like everywhere.
Although don't forget, they had a hurricane last year.
That is true. I know. They ask for rain, and then you got to be careful. But what I'm meaning is, like, everywhere seems to have something. And so you can't just decide, well, there's these areas that are risky, and so we're just not going to, people are just not going to live there because there's
areas. No, we all can't live in Kansas. I mean, right.
Do we want to.
Right. Exactly. Look, Kansas has tornadoes. I mean, come on. It's just right there. You're exactly right. There's no safe place, right?
Right.
2 years ago, all 50 states had federal disasters for flooding.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, but there's plenty of available maps that show you where flood insurance is written, what percent, how many homeowners. Now, certainly there are areas that have less issues than other ones do. They have flooding issues in Colorado. It's at 5,000 feet above sea level. It's not a sea level issue that creates a flood. It's the topography. It's the mitigating. you know, mitigating factors. Look, we have a huge industry on the Mississippi River, right? They've had Mississippi River levee breaks all up and down the river, and lots of other rivers have had the same problem. These are flooding issues that happen everywhere. So it's not just one, it's not just the coast that have these issues. Middle America has flooding issues as well.
It's going to sound horrible, but it gives me hope, because if it's just a few areas, I feel like we can be just written off. But if it's the whole country, they're going to have to, you know, people are going to have to do something about this. It's not just
Ireland. So there are several organizations. I'm on a couple of calls every month of kind of the group you're talking about, where we talk about what's going on, what's happening with, you know, federal legislation, what's happening with state legislation. Some states are more aggressively pursuing legislation. Some are less so. Look, nationally, there's been the initial filing for legislation called the Insure Act. So INSURE. It's more of a catastrophic insurance bill than specifically addressing flood insurance. So as an example, flood insurance would roll into this national insurance program. So look, it just was filed in the last couple of months. There's not a ton of detail about it, so I don't want to get too far out over my skis on it. It may never become anything, right? But at least the legislature are recognizing that there are issues going on and there might be better solutions than the way we're doing it today. And that conversation is happening. It's the first time I heard about something like this was the Louisiana or the local New Orleans Home Builders Association. So look, some of these ideas are floating around. I'm not here to tell you what's good and bad. I'm just telling you that there's some ideas out there that might allow for broader coverages where the risk is spread out across everybody who has disasters, not just specific areas, right?
I feel like Michael Hecht was talking about this like a long time ago, this idea of just like a national program that spreads the risk. And because it's like anything else, like it's like health insurance. So the more people that you have to spread the risk, the better, you know, you can do. So
if there's tornadoes in Kansas,
right,
some of the Louisiana money might go to pay to help them with their initial claim or to get, you know, back on their feet right away. And you know, maybe some of that money is maybe there's still regular homeowners insurance, but this fund helps with an initial payout within a certain number of days, right? While you're waiting for your insurance to kick in, okay? And then if Florida gets hit by a hurricane, well, okay, it's this big national pot of money that, again, helps people get back on their feet and you know, can pay for a hotel room for whatever nights they need, whatever the program ultimately becomes. But what I would say again is it's good there's conversation going on about these types of programs, and we've just got to figure it out. I'm always a little concerned when the government says we're here to help, but something has to, we've got to move this ball somewhere.
Right.
And whether that becomes a rule or the NFIP and FEMA say, no, we don't want that. Let's see how we can improve our efficiencies. Can we bring our prices down? Can we make sure mitigation is taken into account in pricing for flood insurance? I mean, I think anything they see that makes them move in that right direction is a win for homeowners across the country.
Are you guys seeing, one of the ideas was this lottery program, the $10,000 for the fortified roofs and stuff. Are you, as a mortgage person, are you seeing that make any difference so far?
A little bit. Okay. I've got some information from some different insurance companies on what they are claiming their policies are going to be reduced by. But we're still at the very beginning of that process. I haven't had any specific customers come back and say, hey, we got a fortified roof. Our policy was, you know, 6,000 and now it's 3,000, right? Does the age of the roof make a difference in insurance? Absolutely. It's a huge difference in who will even write houses.
Right.
So I'm hopeful it will be successful. It's been successful in other states. Alabama in particular really pushed it, and they've seen some, I think, I would guess use the term significant price reductions in insurance. Now, again, I'm not licensed in Alabama. I'm just going by what I'm hearing. In talking with Insurance Commissioner Temple, I had provided him some information about, this is just what I had right in front of me and that matched up. So I know this is a little above the norm in our market, but this was a $500,000 house in New Orleans. And the customer cut some things out of the insurance, and the policy was still about $8,000 for that policy for the year. And another NAM board member was doing a house in Massachusetts. It was also $500,000, and his homeowner's policy was $1,800.
Yeah.
Just to show you the difference. I showed that to Insurance Commissioner Temple. He said, this is great information. Can you show me a comparison for Alabama, particularly the southern counties? And I went, no problem. I called another NAM board member who I know is in the Mobile area. She sent me four quotes, $300,000, $400,000, $800,000, $900,000. She just didn't have a $500 right there. But the most expensive was the $900,000 property, and the homeowner's insurance was $4,900.
Yeah.
So we're insuring almost half the coverage for almost twice the premium.
Okay.
Just to give you an example, okay? And that had to do with a little bit with the roof that was on the house versus what was here. But that same house for $500 in coverage, it, you know, we've seen policies on that at $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $14,000 in Louisiana. It's just very, very expensive.
And you're saying that a big part of that is setting in place those rules so that insurance companies know what they're dealing with. Because yep. I understand that. Yeah, if you're coming into an area and you have no, excuse me, solid information, that doesn't effective.
Yeah, they're gonna price for the maximum. I mean, these are businesses, right? Let's not kid ourselves. And they're in position, you know, they're there to make money.
Right.
You know, you'd love to think that the insurance company cares about you, but the reality is that it's a business. They're insuring the house. They right. want to collect premiums. If something catastrophic happens, they need to be solvent to pay those premiums, right? But they've got to know what their risk is. And again, what is being requested is not to exceed what's going on in these other coastal states. It's to bring us from being way below where they are up to the normal. And if we get up to the normal, we will have more insurance companies writing. We will have more competition. We will have the insurance companies will know what their risk level is, and that should reflect lower premiums across the board. And there's more items in there. I'm not an insurance agent. I don't claim to be. But I think you're going to continue to see bills from the insurance commissioner to get us to that point of normalcy.
So that is something, I'm just thinking, what's the process there? That is something that comes from the insurance commissioner's office, where they kind of, like, who figures out what the rules are going to be, and how does that work?
Yeah, so it's really the legislature.
Okay.
And you know, the commissioner would work with a legislator to present a bill. It goes through all the normal committee procedures, just like any other bill would. and hopefully they pass, and then they become law at some point down the line, right? Whatever the effective date of the bill is. And by changing those rules, if you want to call them rules, laws, guidelines, then the insurance commissioner is able to have those discussions with the insurance companies. Hey, we changed this. This puts us in line with all the other states. Let's make sure Louisiana pricing is now in line with Alabama pricing and Mississippi pricing. If an insurance company is not writing in Louisiana right now because of the current legislation and it changes, let's go out and get those insurance companies to now come in and write in Louisiana.
Okay.
More competition, right? That's what's going to happen. We hope. That's what we hope is going to happen.
Is there anything that people can do to help with this? Is it one of those things that's like, mm-hmm. contact your representatives? Is it
exactly that?
Okay.
Yeah. Look, we all are living busy lives. You and I kind of talked about it earlier, right? Okay. But, you know, I think City Business and Biz New Orleans and The Advocate and all these places are trying to do a really good job of telling us in the news what laws are being proposed. And when you hear about one that is going to benefit your insurance premium, you need to shoot an email off to your representative, your senator, or your legislator, right? Your congressperson. Again, this is on the homeowner side because homeowners is Louisiana based, right? You need to call them. You need to send an email, go onto their website, right? Just send a comment. We think you should support this, right? Those are the things that you can do. Jefferson Parish has a strike force for homeowners insurance I was asked to be on. So, you know, we just were up last week in Baton Rouge with our white paper. These are all the things that we think are important for improving affordability for insurance, both home, that included homeowners and flood, by the way.
Okay.
So Jefferson Parish is trying to do their own thing. The attorney general filed a lawsuit against FEMA to end risk rating 2.0. It was filed last June. It went to a court. They argued in September. The ruling just came out last week that some of the positions, the federal government won, and some of the positions, the attorney general won. They won enough to go ahead and proceed with the case. Some of the parishes were deemed to have standing to proceed. Not a lawyer. I don't want to get too far into a legal explanation, but this was at the 5th District. It was on the federal level. I mean, so we're now waiting on the Attorney General to see what their next step is. Is the Department of Justice going to appeal, right? So the state on its own is trying to improve the, affordability for the flood insurance side by arguing there needs to be more transparency, that the way they implemented risk rating 2.0 wasn't legally correct, that there are expenses that parishes and potentially the state are going to incur, and therefore they have a right to know how these calculations are being made. And That's what all these arguments are about. So the state is making an effort on the flood side to improve that. That's Liz Murrell, the attorney general, who argued that. So lots of things are trying to be done. It is unfortunately a very slow process. Washington, I think, is even slower than Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge, I think there can be positive steps taken this year. These bills need to pass, and And if they do and they go into effect, I would think that insurance companies would consider coming back and writing homeowners policies here with better terms. And that would create a much better affordability for the homeowners insurance side. Interest rates, we believe, are going to go down by the end of the year. This Wednesday, the core CPI number comes out. It's projected to come out at 0.3% increase, right? So that's inflation. Inflation is the enemy of low interest rates, okay? When inflation was going up at 8 or 9% on an annual basis, interest rates went way up, right? We got to 8, 9%. What most people hear is the Federal Reserve, right? The Federal Reserve raised rates. The reality is the Federal Reserve does not directly affect mortgage rates. Mortgage rates are a long-term interest rate. The Fed, for the most part, affects short-term rates. How much is your car, interest rate on your car financing? How much is the interest rate on your credit card financing? Okay. If you did a home equity line of credit, which a lot of people have done recently, that's affected by the Fed funds rate. Okay. But 30-year fixed rate mortgages, which is what the vast majority of Louisianians take, and across the country for that matter, those are based on uniform mortgage-backed securities. It's a different item. But both are still affected by what's going on with inflation. So you hear the Fed talk about a target inflation rate of 2%. Well, we were at 7 or 8%, and it's come back down. At the beginning of last year, the annual for January was over 6. February, it was 6. In March, it was 5 and change. Those numbers have been replaced this year with numbers in the 3s. So the average rate has come way down because we've removed some of these 5 and 6% annual rates with 3s. And if we can continue to have a low number in terms of the annual rate, that would push us closer to that 2% target. And then the Fed would lower rates on the Fed funds rate. Again, it's not a 30-year fixed change, but it's going to be momentum, right? What's the headline? The Fed reduced interest rates. That's what people hear. So when they hear that, that means, oh, well, all interest rates must have gone down. Now I'm going to be more interested. If we can move our rates, which are right now, let's say in the high 6s, depending on the loan and the program, high 6s, low 7s, and we can move from there to the mid 5s or even a 6% rate, there's enough pent-up demand. People will come into the marketplace. You will see more offers on houses. You will see people who have been waiting to move up or move down, right? Okay. To go ahead and say, all right, let's put our house in the market. Let's see what we can get for it. I'm comfortable if I'm at a 5.75 interest rate on a new loan.
Okay.
They're just not wanting to do it at a 7% interest rate, or back in November when they were at an 8% interest rate. So we want that. We want that inflation number to be continually trending towards 2%. It doesn't have to get to 2%. If it's trending in that direction, Jay Powell has already hinted that he's going to lower the Fed funds rate.
Okay.
And that would create the momentum, the direction to improve the real estate industry across the country.
Awesome. This is super fascinating to me. Of course, as a homeowner, it's very fascinating. It'd be less if I was a rental, but no, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you coming in and kind of explaining some of this stuff, because I've often wondered why things have worked the way they do, and they don't always make sense here. Mostly ever makes sense.
I think that there's been enough conversation with the state legislatures as well, that this is all on their radar, right? They're not oblivious. Most of them, I would assume, are homeowners as well. They're experiencing the same effects that every homeowner is. And I would hope that they would, many of us do, vote with their wallet and try to improve what's going on. We're making efforts to do that on the national side. Again, NAM is doing that as well. And it's one of our, four or five main top talking points across the country is flood insurance.
And you guys have a national regulatory conference coming up in D.C.
Yeah, a week from Monday. 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks from today. A week from today. We do. We're having we have a 3-day conference. We have many administrators from different government agencies coming to speak to us on Monday. We have legislators. We have from different states. We've got FHFA administrators coming to speak. FHFA is the group that oversees Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Okay. So they're going to come speak to us. We have speakers from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac coming to speak as well. So it should be a very enlightening meeting. They're always quite candid with us when we're there. And then on Wednesday, we lobby Congress. So there will be mortgage brokers from all over the country representing NAM and talking to their representatives from across all 50 states.
Awesome.
Yep. Within that group, we have, a couple of factors that we're pursuing. Trigger leads is one item. So are you familiar with what a trigger lead is?
No.
So a trigger lead is when you apply for your home loan, your lender holds your credit report. And your credit report is a combination of information from TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. You chose your loan officer, either from referral or you shopped around, which is really recommended. You talked to 3 or 4 different people. You found out who you had a good relationship with or had a good rate, and you picked that person. When that person runs your credit, what's happening is that TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian are then selling your information, your name, your address, your phone number, and even potentially, depending on the information about the loan you're applying for, to third-party companies who then inundate you with phone calls and texts trying to get your business.
Yes.
And the argument would be that you didn't sign up for that.
Right.
That you didn't give the 3 credit bureaus authorization to sell your information, that the knowledge that they can see that you've applied for a home loan. And we see information regularly, 100 phone calls, 150 phone calls and texts within 2 or 3 days of somebody applying. And many of the sales tactics being used are not always above board.
Yeah.
Okay. People will even call and say, hey, this is Ross. I'm calling on behalf of your lender. Could you send us some additional information? And then somebody gets, doesn't understand what's going on. And all of a sudden they've emailed their tax returns or uploaded their tax returns and their pay stubs to somebody who they did not apply for a home loan with.
Wow.
So there is legislation currently that we're pushing to have passed. We're hoping to have it attached to some bills in 2024 that would eliminate trigger leads. It would only allow for that to be sold to obviously the person who you've applied for the home loan with, and then somebody else who you have a account with already. So if ABC Bank, you had a credit card with them, and then they also had a mortgage division, they could make the argument that your information should be given to them because they already have an agreement.
Okay.
But these 50, 60, 70 other companies that are now getting your information would no longer be able to get that information because you did not authorize that to happen. So we're pushing trigger lead legislation in order to stop that from happening. Personally, I had a client who had to change his phone number.
Oh, wow.
Because he had so many calls over a month period of time. He just got fed up and he flat out changed his phone number and called me and went, I changed my phone number. And all I could do was apologize that had happened. Trigger leads is one item. We are also working on some legislation on the VA side. So a VA home loan is one of the best loans, if not the best loan in the marketplace. If you're a veteran and you qualify, you get 100% financing. Interest rates are affordable. There's very low. There's an upfront mortgage insurance premium, but it can be financed into the loan amount. You can negotiate for the seller to effectively pay all of the closing costs. So you can really get in there for next to no money. The VA loan has the highest approval rate by percentage of all different loan types, and it has the lowest foreclosure rate of all different loan types. So it's a really great product. But currently, if you are a Gold Star family, so if your spouse becomes deceased in service, or even after service, and 5 years down the line, the spouse who is still alive wants to remarry, they lose a lot of their VA benefits when they remarry. It's very hard for, you know, let's say a single mom or a single dad in many markets to afford to buy a house on only a single income. And we think that Gold Star family has already experienced such a loss and they're going to live with that loss for the rest of their life. Why are we taking away one of the benefits that person who gave their life would have earned for their family?
Right.
So we're pushing some legislation that would allow for them to maintain that ability to use that VA loan even if they remarry. So, because you can't do a VA loan with somebody who's not a veteran or not married. And we're not trying to change that. But if you then, as a Gold Star family, if you would obtain that eligibility and you remarry 2 years later or 5 years later or 20 years later, you still could use 100% financing VA loan to buy a house. It just makes sense in our mind to not remove that. Currently, you either have to buy a house as a single person, not remarried, or you have to wait till you're 55.
Yeah.
And then when you remarry, you could use both incomes at 55 to buy a house.
Okay.
What is that spouse supposed to do if they have two kids and really want to buy a house and need a new spouse's income to qualify in whatever market they're living in? Now they're just not eligible for that VA loan anymore. And we just don't think that's appropriate. So just another example of some of the items that NAM is fighting for at the federal level.
Well, you guys are fighting a good fight, and we appreciate it. You know, I mean,
these are common sense. Yeah, and we think they're common sense items as well, right? You know, a little more protection for homeowners who have shopped around and want to buy a house. More affordability on the flood insurance piece. More transparency on the flood insurance piece. How did you come to that premium? And then, you know, look, if you have already sacrificed by marrying somebody who's in the military, and you have doubly sacrificed if that person has given the ultimate sacrifice, why in the world would we remove a benefit that person has given? It just doesn't make sense to us. So we try to promote common sense legislation where we can.
Well, and so keep us posted. We'd love to get the word out from Biz if there's anything that, you know, our readers and listeners should be doing, mm-hmm. or can help, and what you guys are doing as well. So
We will, absolutely.
Kind of an all hands situation at this point.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I think they're just, these are big issues. And as I mentioned earlier, look, big issues sometimes take a little time, but we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep talking and getting our position out there. And I will say that, the Louisiana delegation has been great. It's been, they've been very open to conversation. I believe as a whole, not every single person necessarily is for every single issue, but the vast majority of our delegation is for the majority of the NAM positions.
Okay.
Yeah, you're never going to get everybody.
No. As long as you get enough to get stuff happening.
Across the finish line.
I really appreciate it, Ross. Again, and you have your own home mortgage company, Miller Home Mortgage in Metairie.
Yep, Miller Home Mortgage. So I've had it since 1998. We do FHA, VA, conventional Fannie Freddie financing. We do what's called non-QM financing, which if anybody's a home investor, these are now some of the more popular investor products, debt service coverage, P&L bank statement programs, different things like that. We have connections for home equity lines of credit. We do commercial financing as well. So it's a, full service mortgage company. You'll call, you'll always talk to me. I've obviously been doing this for quite a while, and we're going to do the best we can to get you into the best loan for you, depending on your situation, with very competitive rates and closing costs that are as affordable as possible. And then, of course, look, through all these conversations, we've got connections with insurance agents and title companies and appraisers and inspectors. And we're happy to share that information with anybody who needs a little direction in that way. And of course, realtors as well. So, if you have a realtor, great. If you need a referral for realtors, we can help with that as well.
The whole package, start to finish. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time, Ross, and everything that you guys are doing, and just in explaining things a little bit better. I really appreciate it. It helps everybody to kind of, I guess, understand a little bit about what's going on. So.
Yep, thanks. And look, NAM is a volunteer organization. If hopefully some other mortgage brokers or loan officers hear this, NAM is always open to new membership. And it's we have a board, obviously, that's what I'm on, but we have lots of great committees. And if you're in the business and are interested in joining a committee, we would be happy to have your expertise.
Awesome. So I'm guessing NAMB.org.
Yes, it's NAMB.org.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks, Kim. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Biz Talks is brought to you by Biz New Orleans Magazine. Follow us on social media @BizNewOrleans and visit bizneworleans.com for daily news and stories.